Jim Lorenzen.
Most of us who follow the UFO problem are interested as well in other subjects that stand at the border or maybe somewhat beyond the border of orthodox science. And in referring to this fact, we like to describe ourselves as open-minded. In the practice of open-mindedness, however, it's important, I think, to exercise caution lest our minds become so open that we simply have a hole in the head. We have to guard against a tendency to give support to certain ideas simply because they're exciting rather than because they are substantial. And there's also a tendency, I think, to connect mysteries that do not necessarily have a connection in fact, to lump these mysteries together and to try to relate them to one to the other when maybe there is no real relation. It should be a lesson enough to us to note how readily the sensation-monging tabloids couple subjects such as Bigfoot, monsters, strange disappearances, poltergeist, Bermuda Triangle, freak cognizance, and so on, in order to increase the circulation of their publications. Now, I think that combining mysteries in this way has a basic appeal in that it allows the assumption that perhaps we have only one major mystery to deal with. And this may be more comforting than to accept the uncertainty that comes with confronting the fact that my life may present us with many mysteries instead of just one, and that these many mysteries may be related only in the sense that they are each a part of reality. When the phenomenon of livestock mutilations came to public attention in the early 1970s, there were some who chose immediately to couple this new mystery with that of the flying saucer. At APRO, and I guess I'm speaking largely for myself, we resisted this idea, and I think we resisted it for good reason. For one, sensationalist publicity in the press had triggered a sort of panic at the time in which each and every carcass found became a mystery. It was no longer possible for a cow simply to die a natural death, and the normal encroachments of predators and scavengers became mutilations. Law officers and others quoted in the press seemed to seize on catchphrases such as surgical precision, and it was always said that certain organs were removed with surgical precision, even though an inspection might show you that the surgical precision produced teeth marks. And it was repeatedly stated that there was no blood in the carcass, or that all blood had been drained from the carcass, and quite often these determinations, which really could only be made reliably by a trained medical person, were often forthcoming from incidents where no such qualified persons had been in attendance. Still, correspondence that we received from apparently serious, level-headed lawmen in our great western cattle states seemed to indicate that there was a connection, and we kept our minds open to that possibility. We felt, however, that as a tactical matter, we could not afford to spend time investigating mutilations on the chance of finding a UFO connection. We decided that we would continue to investigate UFOs, and if in this way we were led to mutilations, then we would have verified the connection. Well, I'm prepared to state today that we have followed that policy and we have found a relationship. In not just one case, but repeatedly. And I'll describe briefly some of the pertinent cases. A pretty convincing association developed in the case investigated by Dr. John Durr, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, and Dr. Van Arsdale, all APRO consultants. The case involved the sort of associations that I had previously scoffed at, and in some ways, it seems to try to outdo the sensationalist fiction generated on the subject. I'll quote from the report summary and state that none of the principals are mentioned in the report by name. This was a condition imposed on this investigation by the witnesses in order to avoid attention and publicity, so they'll be referred to in terms of their relationship or their job function. And now I quote from the report from the three gentlemen just mentioned. A few years ago, the business partner and the husband and wife pooled their financial resources to buy a ranch in the Rocky Mountain area. The ranch was to be renovated and established as a working cattle ranch. Despite the long distance from their original location, they were pleased with the size and features of the ranch and so on, but they were puzzled because the ranch had been abandoned for years and there was sort of an unspoken mystery surrounding it. There are a number of very strange incidents supported by these reliable people, and I won't go into all of them. I'll just mention those that seem to be related to the theme of my talk, which is the connection of UFO and cattle mutilations. UFO sightings included nine glowing discs which set down in a pasture near the pond on the ranch, and during that observation a light flash was observed by two men, including the business partner, and at that moment the wife, who was looking out the window, experienced the sensation of a blow to the head, and she fell unconscious to the floor and was revived within a few seconds. A photographer took a picture of a large circle, approximately 75 feet diameter, in a clearing. Initially, the circle supported no vegetation, but now, after a number of years, the grass and weeds are growing again. And in another incident, a cattle mutilation occurred at the time of these increased UFO activities, and the cow was identified as belonging to the ranch. A body of a young bull also was found shortly after a hunting episode, and the oldest son and his friend were frightened when they discovered the cow because they had seen either a bear or a Bigfoot in the area. The young bull, which did not belong to the ranch, was found with his head twisted back and with various organs and parts of his body removed as if by a surgical operation. This is a characteristic of quite a number of the mutilations. That is, that the animal that is found does not belong on the ranch where it's found. It's somebody else's property, apparently dropped there, and there's other evidence to support that that I'll deal with later. During the course of this investigation, our investigators talked to a law officer who patrolled that area. Now, he was quite specific in requesting that the information that he would give would not be publicized, at least not in connection with his name, because he did not wish to cause any public ridicule to be brought upon his office, and he did not wish to cause any ridicule or publicity which would disrupt the harmony of the community. He said that in 1975 there had been several hundred cases of cattle mutilations reported, and that he had investigated many of these cases. In 1976, he said there were fewer than 100, and in 1977 there were fewer than 10. However, he pointed out that during 1977 he had followed a policy that he'd go out on very few calls regarding reported animal mutilations. So these statistics are sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. He simply recognized less calls, and therefore he reports less cases in that period of time. This law officer also described his fear and apprehension when out on night patrol he saw strange lights near the road. Now, he knew the territory very well, and he knew when these lights occurred in an area of a road or not. He said many of these lights seemed to be silent objects which moved off the road and into the air, sometimes revealing cockpits as they flew away. He did not claim to see any humanoids associated with these lights or objects, but he has viewed enough of these events to know that they are very real and that they cannot be accounted for by the usual explanations of airplanes, helicopters, hallucinations, or the planet Venus. Now, although he cannot verify the events as described by the business partner and the family, he knows that their early concerns were based upon this assumption that neighbor boys were playing tricks, and later they questioned him about the cause of the reported mutilations. Now, the law officer is aware that military operations may not be an adequate explanation for the experiences and sightings that have occurred in the area. The law officer does not profess to have an explanation, but he no longer scoffs at the hypothesis of extraterrestrial visitation. With respect to the UFO mutilations, we have a map. This map plots the location of mutilation reports in connection with sources of radiation such as uranium mining and storage and atomic power plants. And the person who created the map was trying to relate these to support a particular theory that the mutilations might be really an attempt to remove organs from cattle that would give evidence of deterioration caused by radiation components, possibly in the soil or atmosphere. I really don't think that's supported too well, but the red M's there on the map show the locations of mutilation reports, and you can see that there's a preponderance down through the heartland of the country and in the states that are where a lot of cattle are raised. In the state of Wyoming, 30 miles north of Laramie, a rancher named Pat McGuire has an account which relates to my theme. This is a drawing that he made, and we'll show a photograph in a moment here. But Pat McGuire states that UFO observation is almost a daily occurrence in this area during the summer months. And when his irrigation system is in operation, he checks the system daily at midnight and at 3 a.m. Thus, he's outside during the hours when many people are asleep. And Pat claims that he and his crew have observed many unusual events. UFO activity often occurs between 11 p.m. and 4 a.m. However, he has observed the strange craft during daylight hours. The objects appear to be of metal under intelligent control, with flashing lights, blue, green, red, and white lights, and the objects appear to be of uniform shape, but estimates have varied from 30 feet high and 300 feet long to estimates of 500 feet long. And the conclusion that he makes is that there are ships of various sizes in the area. In July 1975, Pat McGuire and Mark Murphy observed 7 UFOs for a period of 2 hours. The object appeared to be airships, and 2 objects apparently landed on the far ridge. I'll run through some of these views of the ranch so you can get an idea of the appearance of the area. It's a very lonely place. I've marked out there the area apparently where the UFOs landed and where one hovered for a long time. Just a few shots of around the ranch to give you a feeling for the general setup. This photo shows a rise in the background. Pat and Wanda McGuire watched a huge object, which they estimated to be the size of a football field, on the morning of August 1977 while it hovered for 2 hours beyond the rise. During daylight, the object reflected light so that it did appear to have a metallic surface. And on one occasion, Pat watched a yellow ball which appeared to be located between the trailer house and the distant ridge. Now, there's a smaller ridge closer to the ranch. And in August 1975, a cow apparently was, as he says, sucked up by an unknown aerial object. Pat was watching the UFO with his spotting telescope, and he saw the cow being elevated up toward the UFO, which then moved away from the area. During the next day, Pat drove to the area, and he found a calf on the smaller ridge. The calf was bawling and apparently looking for its mother. No traces of a burned area or landing box were found, and no trace of the missing cow has ever been found. We're a long way from understanding what's going on here, but a case that occurred in 1973 near Pasadena, Texas, which is quite near Houston, furnishes us with still another clue. It was brought to our attention Only recently, when a Mrs. D reported to us that she was very uneasy about a feeling that something had happened to her that she couldn't recall during a period of time in 1973. She said she was returning with members of her family from a bingo game at Pasadena, Texas, with her mother, her brother-in-law, a daughter, and niece, and they saw a maneuvering light, which they first assumed was a helicopter, and it seemed to be following the car. Mrs. D stopped the car to get a better look. Then she got out of the car to get a yet closer look, and the rest of her relatives, as far as is known, stayed in the car. However, there's a question about that, too, which developed later. Over the years, as I said, Mrs. D has been bothered by a feeling that important things happened that she couldn't recall, and she remembered that after that stop, she drove on to Alta Loma, and there she joined a group of their relatives, including a Jeanette and Albert, and the UFO followed them and was appearing to land in a nearby pasture, and it came low enough so that they could see into the large windows. And this was all that she consciously remembered of the incidents. But under regressive hypnosis, she remembered that at the time they had initially stopped and that she had gotten out of the car, that she had seen the UFO elevate some kind of an animal in a beam under the craft. And there is a situation there where the rest of the relatives that were present apparently observed this too, but they do not want to discuss it. They have a sort of a mental block. They simply do not want to talk about it, although they do acknowledge that the incident occurred. When they reached their destination and noticed the UFO coming close and apparently landing, they all remarked that there were very large windows. And Mrs. D remembers that she could look in through these windows, and it appeared to her that the craft was equipped as a laboratory. And under hypnosis, she suddenly began to exclaim, "That's what it is, it's a laboratory. They're dissecting animals in there." But at that point, she told us under hypnosis that she was not supposed to remember that. She said, quote, "I'm entering forbidden territory." And when we tried to find out from her who forbid her to enter that territory, she wouldn't answer the question. But she became nauseous. And we were never able to determine whether the nausea related to what she'd seen in the craft or whether it was some sort of post-hypnotic suggestion which prevented us from delving into an area of information that she was not supposed to talk about. And it was a very effective block, because I tell you, you tend to discontinue a hypnotic session when the subject is threatening to throw up on you. Another mysterious aspect of this case is that Mrs. D's daughter was not with them in the car during the period of travel from the first sighting, and for that period of travel from the first sighting until they reached Alta Loma. And the daughter does not remember this period either. Now, this has all the aspects of an abduction. It appears as though she was removed from the group at the location of the first sighting and restored to them when they got to the relative's house, but she is entirely blank on that period of time, and has had several dreams which sound very much like things reported in the Andreessen affair, which has been mentioned earlier today by Mr. Andrus. I think one lesson that I learned from all this is that we need to keep our minds open to the evidence and not dismiss out of hand those aspects which do not make sense to us or do not appeal to us for other reasons. An area of heavy activity is northern New Mexico. There are quite a number of things reported there. Here's law officer Gabe Valdez indicating some marks found in an area of mutilation. Mutilated heifer. Edmund Gomez, local rancher, pointing this out. Again, I guess there's some examples of the surgical precision that we hear about. This is a rancher in the area who is trying to find some way to recover his losses. He's tried to sue the government, and it hasn't worked. He says they should be protecting his cattle. Of course, that is a serious problem. He's suffered quite a loss, and you can't blame him for trying to recover something, I guess. That's all my slides. We could have the light up. On one ranch in particular that I've just dealt with, over a period of a few years, 6 or 7 head of cattle have been lost in this manner. Dr. Howard Burgess, an APRO member studying this situation, noted that 90% of the mutilated animals fell into a particular profile. He said that they were 4 or 5 year old cows, or they were heifers less than a year old. And all of them that were brought to his attention were of a particular strain, a Charlie Hereford cross. The cattle that were molested in this area showed signs of having been hauled aloft by one leg. The hair on this leg, which could either be a foreleg or a hind leg, would be worn off in a band around the leg, and quite often the leg was broken. And in many cases, they showed evidence of having been dropped from considerable height, in that the carcass would contain a number of broken bones. Now, Dr. Burgess theorized that because cattle were grabbed at night without warning, but still seemingly carefully chosen, that they were somehow marked in advance. And he convinced a local rancher to run a number of these cattle under a black light at night. And they found 20 cows, all of which fitted the profile of those previously killed, all marked in a manner that became luminescent under the black light. Now, the cause of this luminescence was never determined, although Dr. Burgess ran a number of laboratory tests. And after 2 weeks, approximately, the luminescence abruptly ceased in all the samples, and eventually all the marked cows died. Now, there's a definite difference between the mutilated cattle and those dying of natural causes. The mutes, as they're called, do not bloat, and scavenging animals do not touch them. They usually exhibit a hole in both jugulars, apparently where the blood has been drained, and early on, after they've been found, the internal organs seem to be abnormally mushy, and some medical technicians who have handled these organs in the course of autopsy have complained of health problems. Also, though no definite tie-in has been established, one young technician has developed an apparently incurable disease similar to leukemia. This individual had been involved in testing some material which was found on some mutilated cattle in northern Colorado. An electron microscopic examination showed this material to be composed of very minute, precisely formed spheres of a size of 0.3 to 1 micron in diameter, held together by some sort of binder, as I said, giving the appearance of toothpaste. So far, this material has defied identification. In many cases on record, insects which normally attack dead animals died en masse after contacting the carcass. Flesh-eating beetles in Missouri and flies in Colorado were found covering the respective carcasses, and they were all dead, and no cause of death has been determined. In another unexplained oddity, the sheriff of Benton County, Arkansas, reports numerous mutilations, all occurring on a straight line connecting the northeast corner of the county to the southwest corner, and nowhere else in the county. Spectrographic studies of the livers of many of the victim cows shows a complete absence of copper. A control sample of liver bought at a local butcher shop showed an easily detectable amount. It was noted also that the livers from the mutes were a pale pink in color, not the normal color of liver at all. And in this connection, we'd like to point out that high levels of microwave radiation cause the release of copper in living tissue. And that since copper is an agent which binds cellular iron, we suggest that the absence of copper and iron could account for the color change in the liver tissue. Apparently, these metals are released into the blood and disappear from the carcass with the blood. Another symptom worthy of note is that many internal blood vessels are found to be ruptured, but perhaps this results at least in part from the dropping of the carcass from considerable height. Now, back in 1977, a rancher near Taos, New Mexico, collected insurance on a cow which had been a mutilation victim, even though the cow changed in color from red to a cream color during the experience. In northern New Mexico, where a birthday party involving several neighborhood families had broken up about midnight, various participants had barely reached their homes when, as they all reported later, they heard a crackling sound and noted that the area was lighted up in a manner that suggested that a neighbor's house was on fire. These 20-odd witnesses rushed outside to see a disc at an elevation of approximately 100 meters. It seemed to be directly over a state highway inspector's truck, which was parked between two of the houses. These houses were about 25 meters apart. As the witnesses watched, they reported in the light from the UFO that they saw a powdery material showering down and falling on the truck. The highway inspector showed the presence of mind to gather up a substantial amount of this material in a sterile fruit jar. Dr. Burgess eventually had the opportunity to examine this material, and in it he found 22 elements which generally occur in organic material, plus trace quantities of europium, lanthanum, and yttrium, rare earths that can be products of nuclear fission. And there were also trace amounts of platinum and vanadium. There were, in addition, substantial amounts of magnesium and potassium. Now, these last two elements had previously been found in increased amounts in the samples of luminescent hair discussed earlier. One of the obstacles that conventional science has often invoked as a reason for not delving into the UFO problem is its lack of repetitivity. It has been said that science cannot deal with transient phenomena of random occurrence, and I think that this excuse is no longer operative. There are now many areas of this country where incidents repeat themselves to an extent that any investigator with patience, foresight, and little instrumentation can document the existence of alien craft. At the present time, one of our investigators is completing a report of an expedition he made into an area of repeated mutilations. He made three trips and spent 3 or 4 days each trip camped out in an area where UFOs had been reported. He was able to photograph UFOs repeatedly on two of the trips. One was a blank, but on the other two, repeated photographs. And a mutilation occurred during one period of his surveillance. An interesting side light is that he had observed and photographed a UFO at night, maneuvering in a certain area where it dropped behind trees. He could occasionally see a tree silhouetted against it, and sometimes trees lighted up as a backdrop. So he went back in the daylight with his Hasselblad camera to take a photograph of the area in order to establish some reference points to see what he could work out in the way of triangulation. He had observed this UFO from two points. He went back with a Hasselblad camera, set it up at these two points, and took photographs. And when he developed one of the frames, there was a UFO in the picture, which he didn't see at the time. Another of our investigators, and I think he may be in the audience now, stopped on a drive through the South Dakota Black Hills in an area where ranchers claimed to have lost 350 head of cattle in the past few years. I called him when I heard about activity in that area, and it turned out that he was planning a trip through the area, so he stopped. And it was just one of those spur-of-the-moment things with no particular plans, but he did go out with two other men to a high vantage point on the reservation there. And before the night was over, watched an orange disc move into the area and spend considerable time exploring a canyon in much the way that they had been doing in northern New Mexico. Well, he reported this to me by phone. He says, you know, this is not supposed to happen. When the investigator comes, the UFOs are supposed to stay away. I think in dealing with the UFO problem, we can easily fall into an error of thinking, which stems directly from our manner of speaking about it. We tend to speak of a mystery or the mystery, when in actuality there may be many mysteries arbitrarily lumped together, including serious psychological problems projected as UFO cases. Personally, I try to adhere to the principle of parsimony in my approach to all aspects of the problem, to refrain from generating a new theory or concept when one is not necessary. When APRO became involved in UFO research 28 years ago, we felt that the extraterrestrial hypothesis was a viable investigative assumption for at least one important aspect of the mystery, and I still think so. And I think that UFO involvement in the death and mutilation of animals supports that hypothesis. It's an activity that's overtly physical in nature, and I cannot conceive of it as being the work of other dimensional beings, if such exist, nor does it make any sense as the work of Earth-based secret societies. It would be much more economical for such societies to operate their own ranches or purchase cattle to fill their needs. Using such a sophisticated vehicle to rustle cattle seems to me to be an extravagant misuse of technology. Obviously, the losses to cattle ranchers and farmers are substantial, and we can ponder where this fact might lead. Will insurance companies begin to write UFO loss clauses into their policies? Or will this aspect of the UFO mystery eventually be solved beyond reasonable doubt by cattlemen's associations rather than UFO investigators protecting their own interests? I thank you.